Resonance Rewind.
Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now seeing the beginnings of another stage of human evolution.
The truth is that mutants are very real, and they are among us. We must know who they are, and above all, what they can do.
We're not what you think, not all of us.
Who are you people?
What kind of place is this?
I'm Professor Charles Xavier.
I built this school where mutants could learn to focus their powers in a positive way, and also learn that mankind was not evil, just uninformed.
You'll be safe here from Magneto, a very powerful mutant who believes that a war is brewing between mutants and the rest of humanity.
There is a war coming. You sure you're on the right side?
Future, Charles, not them. They no longer matter.
Hold on to something.
Give up on them. Mankind has evolved,
not anymore.
The beginnings of another stage of human evolution. Mutations which manifest at puberty and are often triggered by periods of heightened emotional stress. A school for gifted youngsters. And the beginning of the next stage of human evolution. All vital topics for the latest edition of Resonance Rewind.
Thank you.
Well, the music there from Michael Kamen and his music theme for Professor Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters. This, of course, the year 2000 when the film emerged. Nigh on 40 years, or a little under 40 years, since the original comic book by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby was formulated back in 1963. But we are discussing X-Men on Resonance Rewind. And first up, to actually share her thoughts with respect to how she kind of appreciated this or not, is, of course, Victoria Simmons. How are you, Victoria?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Well, Chloe Rose, who's also with us. Hi, Chloe.
Hello.
Is going to be kind of take this very much as she did with a musical version, insofar as it's going to be on a basis of our debate and discussion, and anyone else who drops into the actual piece, which actually really outlines how she's going to go and watch it. I know she's a keen Marvel fan and has seen most of the Marvel movies. This, of course, was before the Marvel Universe effectively started as we know it today under the Walt Disney Empire. This was very much back in the day of Marvel developing its own thing with the 20th Century Fox. So what were your thoughts on the Bryan Singer X-Men?
I thought it was very, very good. I was thinking, have I seen this before? No, I haven't seen it. And then I sort of watched it, and as I saw parts of it, yes, I know, I do remember seeing this. It was only small bits, but I couldn't remember the storyline at all. But I really liked it.
It's been commented on that this is a more politically complex and morally questionable area. There are a lot of issues here with respect to politics, with respect to ethics. Of course, literally months after this film actually hit the screens, we had 9/11 occur in 2001. So another attack on New York, and significant from that perspective. Did you feel as though the metaphor, which at various times as far as the X-Men have been concerned, has either been for outsiders of society, outliers, or indeed disenfranchised people, people who don't fit in, let's say gifted souls. You can see this as either being of gender issues, issues relating to the way in which superheroes see that, or indeed the movie very clear in this, very explicit. The first shots that we actually see after the credit sequence has actually been formed is, of course, the notion of the concentration camps. And the young Magneto is effectively seeing his mother taken away in terms of Auschwitz and the sort of challenges that you see within that whole field. So what did you think of that? Or did you think it was heavy-handed and comic book movies should be bright and sparkly like yellow spandex all the way?
No, actually, I saw a few of those things when people are... Basically, something happens to them, and that's when their power comes in, whether it's because they want to get out of a situation or something happens. But ultimately, I was able to watch this just as a film, not actually thinking, oh, well, that's a political thing, that's talking about something else. The way it's done is so simple compared to many modern sci-fi films, that I was just able to watch it and appreciate it as a film.
23 years ago since the movie actually hit cinema screens, I remember at the time being very moved by certain parts of it, certainly the Polish background and the connection with respect to that. And for the first time, of course, we see Magneto as a more rounded villain, a person who obviously personified by Ian McKellen effectively has a reason, a rationale, as opposed to just being a leader of a group of bad guys encompassing the Toad, the Sabretooth, and of course Mystique, who's had her own challenges. Kathy Manso, as an American, steeped, of course, in terms of the lore of superheroes and, of course, the X-Men, and there had been a very successful cartoon series that had preceded this movie. What are your thoughts on this particular incarnation?
Well, I'm biased because I love this film. I loved it when I was a kid watching it, and I loved it watching it for this week. I think it's just, you don't realize how quickly you get pulled into it, I guess, if that makes sense. And also this time around, because now I'm focusing on it to see what am I going to critique. And like, I didn't know how much I loved how well they did with the sets. They did such a good job for every location that they had to be in. whether they were outside, inside, in some sort of dungeon prison of Magneto's, or, and the concept of using the powers in your favor, since it's so easy to go against it. But I think the line that really messed me up, because it's a line I've used, and I didn't know I took it from this film, if I took it from this film, was the argument at the beginning when they're at court, they're with the Senate or a Congress, that's what it is. And they're saying that, oh, well, you need to have a license to have a car. And Jean goes like, right, but you don't need a license to live. And I've always used the license for a car argument when it comes to gun violence. It's like, you need a license for a car. Why wouldn't you have a license for a gun with the issues that are happening? So like some things hit a bit more home this time than I thought, than I could remember, because it's been years. And I've seen this movie 20 times. like, it's one of those movies where when I was growing up, if it was on, I'd watch it, you know, and it's a movie that is loved. And I it's not to say that it's, of course, obvious that it's sci-fi, but I don't think it follows into the sci-fi cliches. And you take it more seriously, you get much more involved. Whereas in other sci-fi movies, it's not that you don't get more involved, but you can kind of laugh at some of the concepts they've come up with.
It's certainly taking a lot of, as you say, science fiction material, but also playing around with that whole essence of the superhero trope, which if you take out Batman from 1989, which obviously Tim Burton kind of revitalized, etc. Again, it's interesting that the Donner legacy continues, because Richard Donner, who was, of course, responsible for directing the Christopher Reeve Superman, it's his wife, Lawrence Shuler Donner, who is one of the executive producers of this. And I think it kind of lifts the notion of what's seen as the comic book character from, you know, what was seen as a trivial juvenile aspect into something which actually, you know, works through that. I mean, we have the debate even at the end between Magneto and Charles Xavier, basically, where Magneto's line, does it ever wake you in the middle of the night, the feeling that one day they will pass that foolish law or one just like it and come for you and your children? And again, that whole essence, I think, raised as that whole thing. Whereas obviously the flip side, so my favourite line certainly has to be the dialogue between Hugh Jackman as Wolverine and James Marsden's Cyclops, in which Wolverine says, "You actually go outside in these things," referring to costumes. "Well, what would you prefer?" says Cyclops. "Yellow spandex." Chloe, as I say, you're a keen sort of follower of a lot of science fiction and indeed superhero stuff. I'm surprised you've never seen X-Men.
Well, I think I've told a lie here, because I've looked at the backdrop and I thought, well, I remember Ian McKellen. I remember seeing Hugh Jackman in Wolverine years ago. I'm sure, thinking about it, I think I've watched this film a long, long time ago with Dad, but I cannot remember for the life of me. I think it was a good film, the fantastic characters in it. I need to refresh my mind, Alex. This has got to be done, because I mean, I love superheroes, so why, you know, I should really know this storyline. This needs to be done. This is, you know, this is terrible of me, really. This is disgusting. So I will be doing this. I'll be refreshing.
I mean, Resonance Rewind is more a case of a nudge rather than a beat yourself up over the whole sort of situation. We're not looking for yes. self-flagellation just because you haven't
Sorry.
Seen a particular movie.
I'm punishing okay. myself.
Yeah. Victoria, let's talk about the interactivity. I mean, we haven't spoken about, obviously, the duo of Patrick Stewart as Charles Xavier and Ian McKellen as Magneto, who I think very much are twin spearheads. I mean, at this stage, Hugh Jackman wasn't really known. Halle Berry was sort of known and had done some sort of ski stuff within that. Anna Paquin was known for the piano, but she was more of a junior actress. So her role as Marie, she was just basically sort of beginning to come through that. Ray Park arguably had a good backdrop because this was pre-Gollum, but post Darth Maul in Star Wars. So again, he's using motion capture as Toad, etc. Who kind of really connected for yourself, or did you feel that as an ensemble? Because there are a lot of numbers in there. There are a lot of people, a lot of characters to be developed. And I know that one of the criticisms was that 90 minutes was too short a running time to actually really do the story justice. I mean, I think that Brian Singer did an excellent job on it. But what are your thoughts overall, Victoria?
I thought actually the characters were all very good. They were very different from each other and have their own problems and, well, good things as well to overcome. And I think each one was done really well. And I like the dialogues between Wolverine and Cyclops. I think they're short, but really funny.
Stay away from my girl, as the connection. There's always.
And then when he to prove that it's him, he says,
"Prove that it's you. You're a dick.
I can't remember how I say it.
What's that word?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kathy, what about you? I mean, were you familiar with the X-Men before? As I mean, did you read the comic books at all? Or was it a case of you never quite sort of got into that? I mean, what was the sort of experience of X-Men, who very much are at the heart of the Marvel Universe?
I see what you did there. Yes, they are. Well, yeah, I did, but I was really young when the movie came out. I'm trying to remember 2000. I feel like I was 10. Yeah. I feel like that's maybe 9, depending on the time of year. But I knew X-Men before the film came out because I can thank my dad for that introduction. But I really know X-Men better because of the film and the series I kind of go with. And this is something I was much more consistent with. Now, there's like, how many X-Men movies? There's like 10. There has to be. but I feel like they didn't come out so quickly. I feel like they were spaced out over 20 years. So I think that's an easier way to consume of them than like, you know, one every year or every 6 months. But, you know, what I found interesting when I was looking at the character relationships, because I've seen the cartoon, that was like probably my fix in between films was watching the cartoon. and I remember the relation, they tried to like continue the relationships that were similar in the film, but you start to realize that they don't really show relationships in the film. It's because it's all, you're kind of being dropped into a problem. Right. And so you like, yeah, Jean's dating Cyclops and but their relationship isn't really exposed. And this is very much a movie where there's like individual characters, like there is interaction, but you're not really seeing their relationship grow because it's such a short period of time when this story is happening. So it was kind of funny for me to be realized that I only know their personalities from the actual continuation of watching every movie. Because if I just had this movie to go with, I wouldn't really know the kind of character that Logan is, right? Yeah, he's a lone wolf, which is like the whole trope that he's playing. But, and there's a lot of mystery behind him because he has no memory from before 15 years. And so they're kind of giving you all these little teasers and things. But him as a person, you don't know what he likes or dislikes. And you could say that about every character too. Like, you know, Storm wants to kind of dive in deeper when he's asked by the senator, like, why don't you? It's like, well, I guess I'm afraid of them. And you know, there's a whole backstory there as to why. And I remember her backstory, but to see how they interact with each other, they only interact with each other professionally almost. There is nothing deeper than that, which is kind of surprising because I feel like that would be the flaw in a film, but you kind of have to focus, everyone's on the same purpose here where everyone kind of like, we have this goal, we need to accomplish it, we're focusing on that, we're going to put our stuff to the side for now.
And it's interesting you outlined that, because I came to the movie obviously being very familiar with the X-Men series, and I think actually it was a canny shortcut that Bryan Singer kind of expected, that you knew that Logan or Wolverine was effectively an aggressive, feisty individual. You knew the sort of sense of Charles Xavier. You knew in a sense the unrequited affection in the comic books, at least, that Scott Summers had for Jean Grey and so on. And there were other characters that kind of, in a sense, it wasn't clearly a close adaptation, because you had other characters such as the Beast, Hank McCoy. You had obviously Bobby Drake as Iceman, etc. You have others that would emerge later, such as Gambit and so on. But nevertheless, I think as a variation on a theme, certainly for me, it did work very solidly, including, of course, as I say, the character of Rogue, who many people said Anna Paquin was too weak in the character. But she was just finding out the fact that she has this almost vampiric ability to absorb the powers of other mutants and areas with
respect. I think Suki Stackhouse did a great job before Suki Stackhouse was Suki Stackhouse, personally. but I really enjoyed that actress in general, and this is my introduction to her. But she was also relatable. You know, she's the younger one. And if you're growing up with this, like most teenagers or preteens are, you're going to relate with her more because she's going through this outcast transition, which is very relatable for anyone going through puberty.
Okay, Victoria, let's talk music. Michael Kamen, of course, sadly passed away in 2003. He was a noted film composer. Did you feel he over-egged the pudding? Were there too many dramatic flourishes and so on? Or did you feel that actually he managed to get it pretty much spot on?
No, I think it was spot on because, as I said, the film was simplistic. Not simplistic, but it was to the point and not overdone. And I think that was the same in the music. You got the music for the dramatic, you got the music for the slightly less dramatic and potentially more personal moments. Oh. But I think it was really done very well.
And Kathy, this is clearly an area which you are the expert in, given that Pamela Suman isn't with us, i.e. New York, how it was portrayed, scene of so many nightmarish environments, etc. Ellis Island, ironic, of course, that the United Nations were meeting there in the film, because, of course, Ellis Island was the base for so many migrants and overseas people migrating to America in the 20th century and beyond from that line. How did you feel that they captured the whole sense of that? And of course, the leafy suburbs of Westchester as well.
Well, it's historically accurate. You know, if you know the history of Ellis Island, it wasn't exactly a fun time. it was, people would be stuck there for months. Some would even be there for years. A lot of it having to do with checking if they were diseases, but also it was a form of discrimination due to the poverty, their wealth. Like, these were lower income individuals or lower class individuals of the time, and they would have to. Whereas if you were wealthy, you would never have to go through Ellis Island. You would have to go, you would go straight to Manhattan. So that's, I think there's kind of a poetic justice to that in a sense that they did. I think the Westchester is appropriate because it's not very far. If you're taking a train outside New York City, you'll get there relatively quickly, but it's accessible. So, like, planning it out. But, you know, you have to remember how wealthy Xavier is, because even at that time, that is some of the most expensive real estate in the country. I mean, when you're talking about Northeast United States, you are very much talking about the expression old money. These are people that came from the Mayflower, you know, and have long, long roots here. And it is not easy to get property there. So, but it kind of gives you a little hint as to his background. And yes, he is someone that came from a privileged background, and he didn't just happen upon this.
You can't build a subterranean base with Cerebro and a full jet facility if you're short of a bob or two, shall we say. But that's important. And obviously, even though he could obviously arguably control people with his mind and his setup for that. Bruce Davison, of course, portrayed Senator Kelly. And I was conscious of the fact that there are an awful lot of prisons here, because Davison himself, as the senator, when he's being changed and mutated via Magneto's energy pulses, etc. He's also behind bars and working through bars. Did you feel, Victoria, that metaphor of actually that's part of the state of humanity? We are all, no matter what our gender preferences happen to be, etc., we can all actually imprison ourselves.
Every character here is imprisoned, because they're imprisoned by the fact that they've got something that they're either trying to hide or basically that somebody doesn't like them, as usual. But everybody in this film, whether they're mutant or non-mutant, has some sort of prison that they are in.
Yep. Apart from Stan Lee, of course, the hot dog vendor. I mean, the traditional Stan Lee cameo, which sadly, since he passed, hasn't been there. It's always a joy, even more so in those days, because I think he probably only made one before in the Spider-Man live action. version that had emerged with Sam Raimi. In fact, actually, I think Sam Raimi saw Spider-Man might have been after X-Men, and we haven't actually considered it from that sort of point of view. So his first on-screen appearance from that sort of line. Chloe, are we prompting you any kind of remembrances here? Is it a case of, yeah, I think I have actually seen this after all?
I know I've seen it, but I, you know, when you can't piece the memories together, that sounds dreadful of me, really. But honestly, I have no doubt that this is an amazing film and all the X-Men films are amazing. I just think it's something I need to get on with, literally, and watch it again and refresh the mind. But this is definitely going to be up my street, and I recommend anybody really who's into action to try this out. I don't know why I've not...
too much time on Stranger Things, perhaps, and writing your own music.
Exactly. That's so true, Alex. Honestly, I'm Stranger Things mad at the moment, but you know what? I could be X-Men mad next week. Who knows? We'll see what happens.
Let's turn to characters. Victoria, who for you were your favourite characters? Who were the ones who stood out? Who were the ones who you'd actually say, yeah, I'd like to find out more about them?
Well, of course, Wolverine is the character that you're going along with and want to find out more about, but I quite like Mystique. I find that a completely different type of behavior to be able to change your whole body. Yes, these other people can, I don't know, change, make fire or make ice or something, but their core remains the same, whereas she's changed so much. Why do you need to change all that time? That's the one that gets me. I'd like to know more about her.
And of course, we see her cropping up in a lot of environments, including, of course, playing devil's advocate and being responsible for driving Rogue away from Professor Xavier's safe school, safe place, into obviously feeling that it was all her fault that effectively she nearly killed Wolverine, who obviously had stabbed her, which again interconnects in terms of blame and issues with respect to that. And there is the denouement at the end, of course, where we see that she actually takes on board the persona of Senator Kelly to effectively, temporarily at least, put aside the bill. I'm surprised, actually, our former Prime Minister of the UK hasn't used a similar excuse, basically saying he was possessed by somebody else. I mean, after all, he's used most other excuses, or maybe he's saving that for Donald Trump. Kathy, what about yourself? Favorite character?
Oh, man, it's a hard one. I mean, I agree with Victoria. Mystique is an individual. Like, you know, I mean, she's on a side and there's a team, obviously, but she appears in so many different ways that I didn't even fathom. I remember being heartbroken thinking that Bobby was speaking to Rogue that way. I thought, absolutely not. and then you see the moment after, and you're like, oh, of course it would never be Bobby that would talk to her that way. I got tricked. I was fooled. I will say I also appreciated I appreciated how well Jean was played. She didn't give away too much, which is fair enough. You know, she's going through her own demons. and I think what I liked was that I feel like if I had to consider these characters as real individuals, I feel like Logan's character as Wolverine is probably an individual that probably gets what he wants, especially when talking to someone he's interested in, and that Jean just was not, like, absolutely not going to let that happen. And I appreciate that consistency with that, because usually you kind of fall into these, you know, romantic pairings. And eventually, if you watch more of the movies, yes, it kind of goes that direction. But at least in the first film, they were like, no, we're not going to touch that. we're going to leave that alone. So I did appreciate how the character was played, but I think Mystique is probably my favorite. Rogue has a warm place in my heart, but sadly not my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, we have two giants there with respect to Sir Ian McKellen and Sir Patrick Stewart. And it's really difficult to actually say, well, I think Famke Janssen as Jean Grey did a cracking job in terms of that line. But if we're looking at favourites, I'd probably go down the line of Famke Janssen as Jean Grey, who also, I think, manages to foreshadow slightly the fact that she'll have her own narrative and become Dark Phoenix and again, a whole variety of other elements. We'll come into that. And there were lots of nice little cameos. Kitty Pryde, for instance, who effectively went through walls. We've already mentioned some of the other areas that were actually there in terms of the Young Mutants and the school that were actually within that, that I thought worked quite nicely. Cerebro, I thought, was extremely well portrayed in terms of how the device interacted with both Xavier and, of course, Jean Grey. And you know, just sequences such as the Grand Central Station battle, I thought was again exceptionally well struck together. I mean, again, I can understand people saying only 90 minutes. It was worthwhile from that perspective. Okay, Victoria, let's go for the numbers game then. We will be finding out, I think, from Jessica what she thinks of X-Men. She couldn't be with us today because she's in flight somewhere, obviously with her own mutant power of flying across Carolina, which is fair enough. Victoria, what about yourself? What are you going to go for as far as a number for X-Men is concerned?
9.5.
Aye, indeed. I mean, I would probably go for an 8 to 8.5 because I don't think it's a flawless movie, but 9.5 is good. But it's nice to see in Jessica's absence we've got that positivity. Kathy, thoughts of yourself?
Oh man, I was struggling with this, but I think the number that comes to me is a 9. I would say a 10, only, but the only reason is because I know the other movies and what they bring and how the story develops. So got to give it the 9.
Well, we will be looking at X-Men 2 in a few months from now, but for the moment, I think it's scoring extremely well. Of course, Jessica could actually bring it crashing down, and we just don't know. She might decide to actually take on board and channel the inner Jenny Bill character, or indeed Phil Leonis. Who knows what could happen with respect to that. Chloe, I'm not sure whether you want to actually give an award as yet until you've actually watched the movie again and kind of reacquainted yourself.
Well, if I imagine what it could be, I think I'd give it a 9, but I'm going to refresh and then I'm going to let you know my rating. So this there you go. Good. Yes.
Next up on Resonance Rewind, apart from, of course, our part two of the Xanadu musical look at, we will be investigating and analysing the work of Harryhausen and Schneer. That's Ray and Charles in an epic of the Greek era from 1963, Jason and the Argonauts. That's up, coming up on the next edition of Resonance Rewind. For now, thanks to Victoria Simmons, Chloe Rose, and Kathy Manso. But for now, with a bit of music from Michael Kamen, keep on resonating.
Thank you. Jason and the Argonauts, the classic story of an epic voyage that has been told and retold since the birth of Western civilization, now presented on the screen for the first time.
Pull! Pull! Do your heart crack and your backs break?
Jason and his band of Argonauts, the mightiest warriors the world of adventure has ever known, in search of the fabulous magic golden fleece.
Where will you find this miracle?
I have heard there is a tree at the end of the world with a fleece of gold hanging in its branches.
Here is the magnificent excitement of that legendary time when men like gods and gods like men lived and loved violently. Todd Armstrong and Nancy Kovac portray the classic lovers. Jason, the man who challenges the gods. Medea, who betrays a kingdom for love. Acastus, driven by a lust for power. Hera, goddess and woman, who defies the might of Zeus, king of the gods, who unleashes his fury at rebellious mortals. The Argonauts, caught in the clutches of the towering bronze giant Talos. The Argonauts, battling vulturous Harpies. Jason, threatened by the seven-headed Hydra. Medea, the temple dancer. Mysterious, exciting, and exotic. Jason, battling the army of skeletons.
Kill, kill, kill them all!
One man defying a universe of mortal and immortal dangers. Jason and the Argonauts. A search that became a legend.
La leyenda de Xanadu.
Ever filled with the pain and tears of grief? Did you ever give yourself to anyone?